Hello, and welcome to the MichaelCrane.live podcast. The podcast is about entrepreneurship and tips for staying highly motivated to make a positive change in your life. Keep listening and follow the podcast to stay connected with the community at MichaelCrane.live. So get comfy and enjoy today's conversation.
Chris has worked hard all his life, starting from the ground up to become a successful marketing professional. He has earned his degree in marketing and was a social media practitioner with nearly 20 years of experience in digital marketing. His current role at Lux Level Media had him educating and helping businesses understand how to effectively use digital marketing to stand out and help their bottom line. But that wasn't enough for Chris. He's an entrepreneur at heart. He wants to make a difference in his community and contribute to something bigger than himself. So he became a graduate of the Leadership Green Bay class of 2017. A 2018 Fox Cities Futures 15 award recipient, and a board member for Big Brothers, Big Sisters of the Fox Valley region and Oshkosh Center for Entrepreneurship. On top of that, Chris has launched three businesses while also writing and publishing his first book in 2019. But when Chris isn't busy working hard, being an entrepreneur, he's a husband, father of three, an avid golfer. Good luck, Chris, on that one. Beer connoisseur and mediocre chef. He wants to make sure he's able to enjoy life and have fulfilling relationships with his family and friends and his wider community. Chris has achieved a great deal in his life, but he has stayed humble and kept his goals in sight. He's a great example of what hard work, dedication, and ambition can do. So welcome to the show, Chris. Where do we start?
Michael, thank you so much. Thank you for having me. That was a very nice, very long-winded introduction. sometimes I hate hearing that stuff about myself, but I appreciate the kind words.
I think it's typical that most people do not like to hear someone talking about themselves in that way. So I'm not surprised you would say that. But I think it's really important to give you the introduction to the podcast so our listeners know exactly where you're coming from and why you do what you do, Chris. But I want to ask you, what inspired you to become a marketing professional all those years ago?
Yeah, so I've been telling this story, I feel like, a lot lately, but someone else asked me this question recently, and I just went back to my high school years where I was a small town kid and I was kind of interested in taking some slacker classes. I knew I wanted to go to college, but I wasn't acting like someone who wanted to go to college. So I talked to, I think it was my guidance counselor at the time, and she said, well, there's marketing. And I said, what the hell is marketing? And she's like, well, here's what it is. You know, you get to work in the school store. So you get to bake cookies and sell candy to kids during the lunch hour. You get to be in DECA, which is like a sales competition at the time. It's evolved a lot since. And then you get to take a class trip to New York City. And I'm from a small town, small community. So I thought, New York City, wow, you know, big bright lights, let's go. I don't know what this marketing is, but sign me up. And I took a huge interest. I thought that in the DECA competition, I did very well. And that's what sparked an interest to want to study marketing in college. And bear in mind, this was early 2000s, so there was no such thing as social media marketing. When I enrolled in college, there was no Facebook yet. And so digital marketing wasn't really even a known thing, but there were a couple components. You could run a Google ad, you could have a website, And there was this one thing called blogger outreach, where sometimes companies like put someone to have a blog and they talk about products, but that wasn't even barely a thing. So I go through college, and all of a sudden, when I graduate, Facebook becomes a thing. And then a couple of years later, they introduced business pages. And that's where the light switch really turned on for me. And I've been one who's, I've been around youth sports a lot, and I always enjoyed helping other people. I always enjoyed teaching and giving back. And so with marketing, what was interesting is that I was able to help a lot of people. And I guess if we fast forward a little bit longer, marketing's been a part of my career in every job, and I've had plenty of them along the way in my career. But ultimately, where marketing changed a lot of things for me was probably about 7 years ago when I started working for an agency, and it brought me to new heights with my skill set and my ability and my knowledge. And that is where I started becoming an entrepreneur. And from there, working in the agency world, I was helping a lot of people, and it was bringing me a lot of joy. It filled my cup to know that I was public speaking, I was working with clients, and I was giving them guidance. And it felt really good to know that I was making an impact with, as well as nonprofits. And then if you zoom out to where I am now, last year we did in-kind work for, I think it was 13 nonprofits, where it was a super deep discount, or some services may have been free. And it feels really good now that I'm in a position, or our business is in a position, where we can give back and help those. But also knowing that those nonprofits are doing a lot of really tremendous things in our area. So that's part of what I love, is that you really get to help people, and you get to help them grow their business. And that's what fills my cup.
You mentioned before, when you started, there was no Facebook, there was no Twitter, there was no social media platforms. And people typically thought, weren't too sure about marketing, and especially a digital marketing agency in many ways. And what I find, because I started maybe a number of years before you, I found were people put sales and marketing together. And I think that is wholly inappropriate, because it's serving two different markets. So how do you separate the two personally? Or do you join them together?
I love this question. I'm so glad you asked me this. I recently worked with a client who's in the food space. They're a very large food company. And it's not surprising, because I get this a lot, but one of the goals was, hey, talent acquisition. We need to focus on retaining and also recruiting new talent. And that's something that's, we know, is always going to be a goal. We discovered through conversation, but we always kind of know that. We also know the sales team also, they always want to increase sales. They want as much sales as possible. We know that maybe HR also wants to promote things like some of the cool benefits they do. They want to promote their team building activities and the donations and sponsorships they have going on. And you could go on and on. There's a lot of other things that maybe they want to talk about, sustainability. So the problem is that marketing knows we want to focus on our brand and we want to sell. But the problem is that most, especially big companies, do not work cross-functionally, meaning we don't communicate with HR. Well, it's like, we have to have HR approve this. Well, why can't you go to HR and say, hey, we understand your goals are X. We understand your goals are, you want to drive this much more traffic to this landing page for more applications. We understand you want to put a focus on talent retention. So here's what we're proposing, and here's what it looks like. That would be working cross-functionally. However, most companies work in a silo, meaning that HR does not talk to marketing. Sales rarely talks to marketing unless they need something designed, like a sell sheet. And so I do think that they're separate. I think that all of those departments should be separate. However, I do think that we need to work cross-functionally, meaning at minimum once a quarter, teams need to get together and talk about the direction we're going. We need to make sure that we have goals and objectives, where marketing's asking, how can we help with this? Where HR is asking, how can we help marketing achieve these goals? And so One, marketing needs to take the lead on this because this is their department. They just say, okay, we understand these are the three things you want to achieve this quarter. This is how we are going to help you and help the company achieve X, Y, and Z. And so that is a problem. I think there's two problems there is outside of being not cross-functional in a lot of organizations is a lot of teams don't have or companies don't have a strategy and they don't have a culture of good communication or leadership. And leadership, I would say, is all like if you have good leadership, you probably have a strategy, you probably have KPIs, you probably have great communication among your teams. But a lot of that starts at the top. And so it's funny that you ask me that because I feel like I've been in marketing for 20 years and now I'm shifting a little bit to try to coach my clients on how to lead their bosses so they can say, hey, boss, I need an extra 20% for the ad budget. But it's not necessarily for me, it's to help support the HR team because they're looking to achieve X, Y, and Z. And so I'm bringing a lot of leadership into my marketing with my clients because that is a real problem. And it's okay. I would say it's okay. Just know that there is something you can do about it, but they are very much two different subjects in my opinion.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think in the old days, it was sales and marketing were together. And it's interesting that when you say you're a digital marketing specialist, I think you're a bit more than that, to be honest, because I think you're going down the right road, I think, in terms of working with your clients and encouraging them to communicate cross parties within the company. And certainly from my experience, the sales don't like marketing. There seems to be a barrier there. Yeah. So your role is more collaborator within the corporation to achieve the highest results. And by the way, I think there's three different markets there that you're marketing. It's the HR, like you say. It's the brand of the company with the marketing. It's salespeople knocking on the doors, drumming up that business, getting it through the door. So how, without naming company names, of course, how does a typical client relationship work in your business right now?
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned that. I want to go back to the last question just for a quick second, then let's hit this. One of the problems with sales and marketing is that salespeople want to sell and they're solely focused almost exclusively on selling. And that's okay. That's their job. That's what they should be doing. But a lot of those people believe that that's what our sole focus should be on social media or online. But the problem is if that's your focus on sales, people will tune you out. Because rhetorical question real quick, who's listening? Who likes advertisements? Who likes to be sold to? Who likes 10% off, 20% off offers? The answer is probably 1% of people. And so what's going to happen if all you do is sell, 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 or promotion, sales, talking about your products and services all the time? Not only will you not have any followers, but the ones you do have will unsubscribe, unfollow. It will not engage because social media is social. People want to know about you and your company. They don't want to be sold to. But as a byproduct, if you add so much value to their newsfeed and you can be so relevant and interesting in different ways, they're, as a byproduct, going to want to do business with you. So I think you sell by indirectly selling, and maybe 10% of your social media specifically should be focused around trying to convert people.
In terms of selling to them, which leaves 90% where you're building the relationship.
Exactly. Because people buy based on relationship.
Indeed. They like and they trust, they buy typically.
Yeah. Yeah.
So give me a good example of your recent collaboration with one of your clients. That golden nugget idea that came to you, you're thinking, wow, why didn't I think about that before? Because this is a game changer.
Yeah. And I'd love to get back to the other question too, but I would say for this one, I, for the longest time, was trying to help my clients solve a problem. So for example, they need help with social media I would say, okay, well, let me mock up some content for you. If you like this, we can work on a retainer. And that was fine. I could deliver them really nice, beautiful content. Or they say, hey, Chris, we need help with our Google Ads or our Facebook Ads. And I'd say, okay, let me just mock up kind of an outline. Here's what it's going to be. We'll run these two ads. Here is the two ads I would like to run. But I think the problem with all of that is you can't just jump into any type of client work and expect that you're going to achieve these great, great results. And where I'm going with this is ultimately, I want to work with a client for more than just a month or two. I want them to be on board long-term, because I'd rather have clients that last rather than having to go back to the well and keep bringing on new clients. Because it takes a long time to build that relationship. It takes time to onboard them and build trust. So I'd rather just have 10 clients that I get to work with for a year, 2 years, or forever. And I think the biggest thing that I missed earlier on in my career, as well as I think a lot of other businesses miss, is they're not strategy driven. And I know that sounds like a really boring answer. I'm guessing you were looking for something more exciting, but ultimately your strategy is your foundation. And I oftentimes, I'm very fortunate that I get to speak a lot in public forums. And it's not uncommon if we have 100 people in a room, I'll do a quick show of hands who has a strategy. And I'm not kidding, Michael, maybe 10% at best put their hands up. And then I'll say, okay, real quick, who has it in document format? Not in your head. And three or four more hands go down. And I'd say, like, WTF, how could 5 people out of 100 actually have a strategy? Like, and then I'll say things like, how do you know what success is? What are your goals? Can you quantify your vision for me right now? If I asked you a year from now, were you successful? What would you say? Yes or no? But that, even still, that doesn't mean anything. How do you gauge? Like, how do you know what you're going to do next week, next month? The answer is you don't, because you don't have a North Star guiding you. And so strategy is just so important. Those that don't have a strategy get to work every day and they feel overwhelmed. They feel like they have this big burden on their shoulders because they don't know what to do. They don't know what's working. They don't know what's not working. They don't have a direction. They're not probably following their brand guidelines very well. They're just really throwing things against the wall, hoping that they can keep up with posting consistently, let alone all these trends that are happening every day. And so what I help my clients with now is really forming a very robust strategy, an intelligent strategy. But the problem with strategies, Michael, is, you know this, they're basically useless unless you use them. So for example, I got really good at making strategies years ago, and I would make a 20-30 page document. And my wife would ask me, being an entrepreneur, hey, you know, that strategy was really cool. How often do you look at it? Did you look at it at the end of the year? No. Well, why? And I said, well, frankly, it's too long. That's a 30 page document. It's going to take me 3 hours to read that. And she's like, well, why don't you just cut the fluff? Like, if you had to, how long should it be? And I said, 1 or 2 pages. So that's what I started doing for my clients. And that's when a light bulb went off, is that it would be, if we could make things easier, because entrepreneurs do not make things easy, we would look at that. We would tape that up to our wall or a tack board, and we'd reference that all the time. So to me, it's, we have to have one, but it has to be simple. Otherwise, we will not pay attention to it. We will not use it. There's really a couple other elements, but for sake of time, I'll get to the second most important one, is implementation. Because most people, I could hand a strategy off, and I'm telling you right now, just like the strategy conversation, maybe 4 out of 10 will actually implement on the strategy. And if they do, it's just like a weight loss plan or a New Year's resolution. It's 2-3 months, and then they start going back to their old ways. So to me, it's really important, and we can talk about this later, building a way to execute, blocking time on your calendar, prioritizing what you need to get done. And again, if you have the strategy, you know the goals, this quarter, next quarter, this year, I'm not talking about 5 years out, this year, you will prioritize the things that are important, and you will not find time, but you will make time to do things like social media, things that take a back seat.
You've said a lot there, Chris. And you mentioned the word success. But how do you measure the success? And how long does it take for success normally to show up in the work you're doing?
Well, let's tackle the last one, which is success can take years. It can take a long time. It's very uncommon that anybody's going to achieve their big, hairy goal at the end of the year. Those are called BHAGs, big, hairy, audacious goals. I think that you need to be very intentional about setting the bar low. And I know that may not sound like a positive thing from a very optimistic guy like me, but you may say, hey, I want to increase my sales, but I want to do it by 12% this year. And I like that because it's attainable and it's reachable. So if you get that, that's success. But the opposite is true with failure. And it's not necessarily that you failed, but if you set your goal too high, let's say 25%, in most cases, that's not realistic. So let's say maybe you get to 15% increased sales, not 25. I would call that a huge success. But based on the goal that you made, which was not a very smart or intelligent goal, you achieved failure. But I would say that's wrong. And so you have to do something here to measure and figure out what success is. And to me, when I talked about strategy, you have to audit. And many people will make a strategy and I'll look at it and I'll say, okay, well, you said you wanted 10% more more sales, you wanted 15% more web traffic, and you wanted 20% more email signups for your email list. Where did you get those numbers? Like, well, you know, it sounded realistic. And, you know, based on, I think, how we're currently going, I just made those up. And I said, exactly. Those are arbitrary goals, arbitrary numbers that mean nothing. And your strategy will mean nothing if that's what you do. So you have to then go back and audit. You have to audit yourself and say, hey, I'm setting this BHAG goal, this massive goal of 25, 30% more sales. Do I have 6 hours a week to do more of, let's say, prospecting and cold calling and cold messaging and advertising, et cetera, et cetera? Because if I only have 2 hours a week to do that, then I need to set that goal at like 6% more sales. You also have to audit, what are we doing on marketing? What are we doing in our social media? And then you say, okay, let me look at the Google Analytics, the Facebook Insights, whatever platform you're on, and you let those numbers cascade into your strategy. Now you can make a very intelligent prediction about where you should be and where you can be with X more effort, X more time. And again, you've audited, you understand what your bandwidth is. So you say, I can add 2 more hours to this, which means maybe I can get to 12% or 18%. And now we have a realistic goal. And what happens when you achieve that realistic goal is all of a sudden you feel really good. You feel energized. You've got more confidence. And that to me is success, is finding the right level to raise that bar, hitting a couple of short-term goals and letting that snowball into bigger long-term goals. But you got to start somewhere. And that's maybe even the other problem, is that some people just don't. They have New Year's resolutions, which is kind of BS in my opinion. You need goals. Goals are what are going to sit there every day on your desktop, on your post-it notes, and remind you, hey, are we working toward this or not?
Goals aligned with vision means so, so much. Chris, this podcast has an awful lot of entrepreneurs listening to it, business owners that may not have a strategy and may not know about their social marketing goals. Now, if you're starting out in business on day one, how soon should you start your social media digital marketing campaign to drive the sales through the door? And what would it consist of exactly?
Good question. So if you're starting a business right now, or you're a new business, you should start right away. Even if you say, well, Chris, you know, I'm not going to open my store, or I'm not going to have product to sell on my website for 2 more months, start now. I don't care if it's a year from now, let people know. Start to build interest, because you have this wonderful opportunity. You have 1 year to build a following, to get people familiar with your brand, to build a connection with them, so that when you do release that product, you might have 5,000 followers. That's a huge advantage because most people start too late. They start after they've opened their business and they're hoping and praying for sales when you technically had all this time to start building excitement, building interest. And that to me is a big, big thing. So what would I do? I would do a couple of things. Is I would first build a strategy, just as we talked about, very simple one. And I would set very limited goals, just two or three really easy goals, which is I want to achieve X in sales this year. I want to have X many followers. And I want to maybe it's an email list, because an email list to me is so valuable that you basically own that list in perpetuity and you can continue to keep your brand top of mind for those people who may not be on social or may not be as active on social media. And also, I would say this is that, you know, being able to reconnect with your customers or remarket to your customers is much more inexpensive than trying to acquire new customers. Anybody who's in business knows that to be a fact. So I would be very intentional about trying to identify who my audience is. So for example, if you're just a shop, maybe a boutique of some sort, brick and mortar, and you want people in your door, you have to identify who are my two or three customer segments. And then I want to go to the platforms where they're going to be most active. And I don't want you to just think, oh, Facebook and Instagram. I want you to get a little more creative and think about, is it LinkedIn? Is it TikTok? Is it Snapchat? Is it whatever? And I don't want you to do the same old things that you've always done, because if you do the same old things you've always done, you should expect the same old results. But right now, vertical video is the hottest thing. And that is where, and I say vertical video, I mean things like Reels and TikToks and YouTube Shorts. That is where people are getting the most amount of reach and engagement. So I would focus very heavily on creating video content. I would get in front of people and I would educate them. So if this is a shop that sells clothing, I would talk about fashion trends, matching, ideas to help people understand what goes well together. And the same thing if you were a boutique or makeup or hair, you could talk about those things and build this unbelievable trust as a thought leader with your audience. Again, I love LinkedIn for so many reasons, but I would also, as you get close to launching your store and opening, I would really try to focus on a launch countdown or an opening countdown and let people know 10 days, 9 days, and then have a big promotion for when you launch so that you have some virality to your posts. People get excited. They want to come in. You attach a promotion with it. I could go on and on and on, but I would focus very heavily on the email, the social, and obviously your foundation for everything, for any business, whether you're brick and mortar or your e-commerce, hopefully you're both, is making sure you have a really strong website, because that is where most people are going to look first.
With regard to your email list, mention your email list at the top of your armory as you build your marketing campaign out. Where do people hold their database typically, in your opinion?
All over. And that's probably part of the problem. If you're an established business and you do any sort of e-commerce, you probably have all of that data stored somewhere in Shopify or WordPress. It can very easily be exported, but the problem is most people don't do that. I have also seen where in more traditional old school businesses, people have them in spreadsheets and Excel and Google Sheets and such. And then I've seen where people have a hodgepodge of different places where they keep data. And that's unfortunate, because it probably means you're not using that information. But I would be very intentional about both leveraging, maybe it's family and friends if you're a new business. I would be very intentional about reminding people on social media that you do have an email, and give them a reason why they should subscribe. To me, I think that's key. Is there something different in the email that they can't find on social or can't find on the website? Are there promotions or videos that are more exclusive to your subscribers? And so it is interesting that you need to find a way to coalesce these different systems you have together. And you can use tools like Zapier, which is a free integration. It basically is a way to communicate two different tools together. So if you're using MailChimp or Constant Contact, you can have Shopify send that data to this platform with what's called a Zap. And so There's a tremendous amount of resources to help make your life easier as an entrepreneur if you want them.
Chris, I could have this conversation with you and it could last for hours.
For sure.
But I'm mindful about Chris, the digital marketer, versus Chris, the entrepreneur. Tell our listeners a little bit more about you and how they can find you for you to help them.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. And I'd love to continue the conversation at some point. These were some really, really great questions. I love that. So I'm a, as you know, digital marketing consultant. I do have a couple of different businesses, but if you liked what I had to say today and you're interested, I'm giving away a free marketing audit, and that could be a personal audit. That could be a business audit. You can go to my personal website, which is iamchrisburns.com. And there's a Calendly link at the top where you can book a 15-minute session with me. No pitch required. There's no sales at the end. There's none of that. Just an opportunity to pick my brain and learn from me. So iamchrisburns.com. You can find me on LinkedIn. So if you just want to stay connected, I publish a lot of interesting marketing tips and tricks online. I've also got a newsletter there. I did just launch a few digital marketing products on my website. I've got a LinkedIn profile playbook where I teach people how to optimize their profile, as well as I've got a concierge service where we do it for you as well. And then if you're interested in maybe more done for you marketing services, my agency Lux Level Media does pretty much everything under the sun outside of maybe some few things like branding. But and then if you're interested more on like the mindset and the attitude stuff that I talked about, I did produce a book, and you mentioned golf, Michael. I produced a book called King of the Mental Swing: How to Win at Golf and Life by Thinking Differently. And it's really 60% life, 40% golf. And it's examples that apply to everything and help people see the glass as half full. And I say this, and this is where I'll leave you, Michael, is that we are 100% in control of our life. We are in control of our attitude, our outlook, our self-talk, everything that we output, we are in control of. And so if you want to make it a great day, you can have bad moments, no doubt. But if you want to always have good days like me, check out the book, because I think that we can control a lot of the outcomes we have in our life, and we can be the best version of ourselves.
So as we bring this podcast to an end, Chris, I want to just recap and ask you a couple of questions about what you're doing now from a digital marketing perspective. We see so much online about digital marketing and the use of Facebook and so forth. But what advice would you give to someone looking to get into digital marketing today?
Yeah, I think if you're looking to get into it, whether as a profession or as someone who maybe wants to work in an agency or be an entrepreneur like me, I would say find a niche, find an area within marketing that you can be a subject matter expert and go all in on that. Now, it doesn't mean that you can't do other things, but for example, one of the things that I try to specialize in is social media. And if someone were to say, well, Chris, what about social media? I could say something like specifically building your brand on LinkedIn. And as you've probably heard, the riches are in the niches. I've really learned to grow and appreciate that over the years. I'm not saying you need to niche down quite that far, but if you love digital marketing and you feel like you're an expert in that area, I would say, what is it? Is it email marketing? Is it search engine optimization, website design? And then try to go another layer deeper, because there are always people looking for someone in that with that skill set. And you can't be everything to everyone. Otherwise, you end up being nobody. And so often when I am trying to vet out a service provider, and let's just say maybe it's a marketing provider, just for sake of making this easy, if you're an agency that claims that you do everything, how can I assume that you're an expert at everything? It's just doesn't seem very likely. I would rather work with a company that is a specialist in maybe running social media ads on Facebook, because they do one thing, they must do it really damn well. And so that is just kind of perception meets reality. And so that's what I would tell someone is really try to find that niche and become the subject matter expert in that area. And I'm still continuing to work on that. And I've got kind of the three variations of digital marketing expert, social media consultant, personal brand expert. And you just got to find what you're most passionate about and take it from there.
What's your brainstorming when finding a niche that you're, one, you've got to be interested in, and two, going somewhere where the field isn't crowded?
Yeah, yeah. So I actually had this conversation with someone recently on a podcast, and I said, so typically we come to this fork in the road in life where maybe we're interested in a career change, or maybe we're interested in pivoting our business. And so you have to kind of look at things a few different ways. Is maybe you're saying, well, I could go three or four or five different ways. That's a lot of different ways. So how do you eliminate that and say, okay, how do I get that down to two? Or how do I find that one area, that one direction I should go? I would say there's a couple questions you need to ask yourself. Of those options, which are you most passionate about? And so obviously you don't want to do something if you're not at least, I would say, 75% passionate about, because you are not going to be very happy. And if you're not very happy, you're not going to bring your best self home to your family, to your friends, to everything else you do in life. The second thing is where is the stress and the bandwidth going to be? So for example, I could take another job today, maybe making 25% more, but if I have to work 20% more, I'm away from my kids, it's going to add more stress. That is probably not the best bet, because I'm going to end up burnt out and out of a job or quitting in a year, give or take. So I look at that stress, that work-life balance opportunity. I do look at how passionate I am about something. I also then look at the income opportunity. So if you're an entrepreneur, one of the things I look at is, what is the scalability of this? Does it give me an opportunity to scale at six figures or beyond that? Because if it doesn't, it's probably going to be something you're going to end up losing interest in over time. And what I found is that when I was, and granted I'm in the US, when I was in my 20s, a side hustle that made $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 was amazing. Like, I thought that was being rich almost. And now I think, well, you know, I've got three kids, I've got two dogs, I got a big family, I got a lot of other responsibilities. Like, I could never, I couldn't touch that. And so that's another opportunity. And I think if you look at those three things, you can narrow that down into, you know, where should I niche down? Where should I go next? Where should I work next? And so for me, it's, again, I'll recap those. It's about, where are you most passionate? Where are you going to have that work-life balance? And then it's also the income. Now, there are certainly other factors, but if you do that, you're going to find something where there is opportunity, not just today and tomorrow, but also 2 years, 3 years, 5 years down the road. And I'd also say this, Michael, is that I had a good conversation with a friend yesterday, and he's kind of at that fork. And I said, you don't have to figure out what you want to be when you grow up. And granted, he's in his early 30s. I said, you just have to have a vision for what you want to accomplish this year. Because as an entrepreneur specifically, you know, what we end up doing 2 years from now might be vastly different. And so that could be the same in your career and your job. Let's just focus on getting the best result out of 2023 that we can right now. And as we go day by day, month by month, we're going to adapt and adjust accordingly to that plan.
I think that's really great advice for anyone starting out in business. But also, if you're in business and you're at that junction, do you take the left fork or the right fork to reach your overall goal, your vision in life? But I just want to ask you, what's been your biggest accomplishments in life so far? Or actually, accomplishments in life, in business, and including your family?
Yeah, I would say, you know, this is probably the easy cop-out answer, but, you know, just having a family of five that's healthy, that is thriving, successful, just very thankful to have good health, kids that are succeeding in school. So that, to me, I feel like is a great accomplishment. In terms of career and personal, I'd say two things kind of jump out to me. One is I had published my first book a couple of years ago, and coming from someone who is definitely not a writer, It's never been a strength of mine. But I would say that the process took me about 10 years. And there were some career changes, some moves, getting married, having kids, major health scare, all got in the way of that. But it helped me become a better writer. And I've become better for that. So I'm actually working on book number two that I hope to publish this year. And the other one was just recently, I won an award with a local chamber of commerce for most inspiring business leader of the year. And I would say for me, I don't know that I was the most inspiring person, but as a couple people have said, you know, obviously you've made an impact on enough people to accept that award. And so that to me is always got kind of been a part of my core value, is that I feel like I do have some gifts, which is around marketing and business and leadership. And I've always enjoyed sharing my knowledge and my skills with other people, and just by teaching and organically giving back in my community. And I think that those values and those actions are part of why I've received that award. And so I don't necessarily think I'm the most inspiring person, but it is an affirmation that I think a lot of what I'm doing in the community and in business is I'm doing it for the right reasons. And thankfully, I'm very fortunate that at least one person has recognized that.
I think you're a very humble leader, and maybe we don't recognize ourselves as leaders until someone kind of recognizes us in that way. But just remind our listeners how they can find more about Chris Burns.
Well, thank you. And thank you for having me on the podcast. I am very active on LinkedIn. It's one of my favorite platforms. So if you're interested in connecting with me, I share a ton of informative educational content pretty much every day. Post. I am, if you go to LinkedIn /in/ChrisBBurns, there's two B's in the middle there. Connect with me. I've got a newsletter, some digital products. I also have a personal website, which is IamChrisBurns.com, where you can find a link to my calendar. So I am giving away a free business audit or marketing audit if you want to book some time on my calendar. No pitch, no sales ask, nothing like that. Just free time with me if you're interested. And I've got some digital downloads and things that you can access there as well. In addition to my marketing company, which is luxlevelmedia.com. I'm kind of all over. I do have a leadership podcast called hustlenationpodcast.com if you're interested in that. And I just genuinely love to connect and engage and interact with all you wonderful people out there.
And that brings our podcast today to a really nice end. Chris, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Michael. That was fun. Hope we can do it again soon.
Today's show has been sponsored by www.teameasycrane.co.uk. We help you build your business and grow recurring profits. Thank you so much for listening, and don't forget to hit the subscribe button.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have a business story to share, please reach out and contact us on michael@michaelcrane.live. To hear more stories from entrepreneurs and business leaders, make sure you hit the subscribe button on iTunes and Spotify so you never miss an episode. We look forward to having you back for our next podcast show. Thank you.